Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, AWM Program Director Allison Sansoni speaks with journalist Tom Rosten about his new book, The Writer's Crusade, Kurt Vonnegut and the Many Lives of Slaughterhouse-Five. This conversation originally took place October 15th, 2021, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Thank you all for being here with us in person and online, and for valuing the past, present, and future of American writing. We're here this evening to talk about the life and afterlife of one of the 20th century's most beloved books, and the intersection between Slaughterhouse-Five and the events that shaped Kurt Vonnegut's writing of it. The Writer's Crusade is a literary and biographical journey that asks fundamental questions about trauma, creativity, and the power of storytelling. Its author, Tom Rosten, has written about culture, food, and film in New York City for more than 20 years, profiling artists and actors and leaders in fields from conservation to cinematography. His writing has appeared in the New York Times, Food Republic, Fast Company, and Salon, among other publications. Welcome, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here. So, Tom, your book starts with a shocking story that you, right off the bat, you admit that you're not sure is true. Tell us what that story is and why you decided to make it the beginning of the book.
Okay. I'm going to talk around it a little bit because I want people to be a little bit surprised when they read it. But yes, so the mission of my book to write about Slaughterhouse-Five was largely to make it anew, figure out a way to make it fresh. I didn't just want to write literary criticism. And so it took me really almost a year to find a story. I stumbled upon a story, maybe I will reveal it, that possibly Kurt Vonnegut committed a war crime. And I was shocked to hear it, but I was also excited and titillated and also kind of greedy. I was like, oh my goodness, I've discovered something about Kurt Vonnegut 50 years after he wrote this incredible book. And so I wanted to report it out, because that's what I am, primarily as a reporter, but also a writer. And I started thinking about myself and why this was affecting me so much. And I just realized I have to write about this. And so there is this story that I follow in the beginning about whether or not Kurt Vonnegut killed one of the guards at the POW camp that he was imprisoned in.
Tell us a little bit about starting to write a story that, you know, a lot of people do know a lot about. You know, this is a novel, there's a lot of commentary, there's a lot of information. How do you start sifting through what is already known in order to come to something that is unknown so that you have something new to say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess all writers, there's an ego to all writers that we think that our ideas are original. And so when I was looking at Vonnegut and looking at Slaughterhouse-Five, in my mind I was formulating this sort of the scaffolding where I saw that the book is all about trauma, and which isn't a radical thought, but not only is the book about trauma, but we live in a culture now that is obsessed with trauma in different ways. And so I thought, well, I'm going to graft that culture onto a look at this book and see how it's changed from the time when Vonnegut was writing it. And I found it fascinating. I hope other people do too, to think about how Vonnegut related to his experiences and his sense of trauma, and how he really denied it in the way many people of his generation did, that he was affected by the war, versus the fact that we live today in an era where everyone talks about their trauma, and not to belittle it in any way. But I mean, you'll hear someone go to the barista and have a bad experience, and they'll say, "I've got PTSD from the coffee that they made me the other day," and you know, that's just—it's too much now. Whereas Vonnegut came from an era when there wasn't enough talk about it.
How did you first encounter Vonnegut's work?
like most people in high school, I read Slaughterhouse-Five, and I loved it. And then I ran and saw the movie, or I rented the movie, and I was obsessed with it. And that's how. And then I was, I explained in the notes of the book that I was lucky enough to be an intern at The Nation after college, The Nation magazine, where Kurt Vonnegut wrote. And I was actually working in this little cubicle, and the operator patched a call in, and on the line was Kurt Vonnegut. And he was just said, I need someone to do some research for me. And it was me. And so it was just a little moment. He gave me $50 to look up a word. I was totally thrilled. But then jump another 20 years, and I was talking to my editor about this series that he's doing about books on books. He's done a book on 1984, a book on The Color Purple, and we agreed Slaughterhouse-Five would really be a great book to look at.
What do you feel is the root of that enduring love for this book? That, you know, there are classics that everyone knows that are still taught, that are still relevant. There are others that fall out of fashion. What is it about Slaughterhouse-Five that has so captured our attention for so long?
I'm obviously very biased because I've read it so many times now in the last 2 years, and every time I read it, I am just wowed by it. I just cannot believe how fluid and interesting, and I find new things all the time. Well, I guess to start, it's a work of great imagination. It's a very creative book. Can I ask, who's read Slaughterhouse-Five? Okay, so most people, half people. It's a book that goes all sorts of directions. There's traveling in time, there's aliens. There is a central character who you can't really trust his perception of things. And I think Vonnegut worked really hard at trying to create a character who people could identify with, at the same time that he also wrote this incredibly humorous, absurd, fantastical story. So it's both things, that it's entertaining. And Vonnegut, most of his life, before he wrote Slaughterhouse-Five, he was writing short stories for magazines, trying to just make money for his family. And he called himself a hack all the time. He was just trying to make money writing stories. So in other words, he was always thinking about the audience and trying to entertain them. And I think he did that at the same time that he actually was able to create a literary masterpiece.
You spend a lot of time in the book talking about the idea of post-traumatic stress disorder, our understanding of it, and the need that people have to diagnose Vonnegut with it, or, you know, to see how it relates to his characters. What is the role of PTSD in this book, and what did you ultimately come to as a conclusion about trauma and what Vonnegut was writing about?
So It was a balancing act, because I did see how so many people are looking at Slaughterhouse-Five through the prism of PTSD, and I wanted to make that the focus of the book, but that's two very different things, right? That's a scientific, a medical diagnosis, and then there's a work of creative imagination, and then there's looking at art for art's sake, and then there's also looking at the author and committing what we know as the biographical fallacy of saying this book reflects the author. But Vonnegut invited that merging of different worlds, the transcending of the nonfiction and the fiction, because he wrote this. Okay, this is, I keep looking down at this. This is Slaughterhouse-Five. He wrote this book in which he puts his character into the novel. He puts the author's, himself, Kurt Vonnegut, he refers to himself as I. He's in the book, so he creates metafiction, and he himself invites readers and writers such as myself to say, okay, where does the nonfiction and the fiction, you know, overlay over each other? And I don't come to a definitive conclusion about PTSD as it relates to Kurt Vonnegut. I don't think that would be fair. That would be armchair psychology. The guy's been dead for 14 years now. It would be silly. But I do show that his children, most of his children, think he had PTSD, that a lot of his friends do, a lot of important people do. I think he was very much affected by the war and what I would say is the trauma of war. But just to say definitively he had PTSD, I think would be silly for me to do. But I am willing to say that Billy Pilgrim had PTSD, and I'm curious what people will think when they read the book and what they have to say too.
In the book, you're often talking to writers of contemporary war stories, or at least more recent than World War II. So Tim O'Brien, Carl Marlantes, numerous authors of works about the Iraq and Afghanistan campaigns, about how they wrote their stories. Why did you choose to do that, and what insights did they offer about Vonnegut?
Going back to, I wanted to make this my book, not just literary criticism. I wanted it to be alive. I wanted to show why this book is so relevant today. And I think this book is as much about a character and storytelling and trauma, but most of all, I think Vonnegut really wanted to wrestle with how do you tell a war story? And he reflects on that all the time in the book. He's mostly in the first and the last chapter. He keeps on writing about how do I do this? It's like stopping a glacier. How can you write an anti-war book? And he wrestled with that. And so I think it's really relevant to look today at writers who have learned from Vonnegut, veteran writers like Matt Gallagher, and this great young new writer, Matthew Molina, and then well-known guys like Phil Klei and Kevin Powers, who've won all these awards for their books about fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think that they, too, very much carry on this tradition of struggling with trying to write about war. And what I think the most sensitive and truthful veteran writers do is they manage to make war look awful and not glorify it. And that's another conversation I go through in the book. And actually, I'm going to do a little reading, I think, later, and it's going to be, I'm going to show a bit of that.
Aside from the story that you tell at the beginning, what other new insights about Slaughterhouse-Five and Vonnegut did you discover through your research? Not giving too much away.
One of the things I find I'm tickled by all the time because I've been working on this book and I'm talking to people all the time about Slaughterhouse-Five, and I'm going to bring this to the audience too, is I'm convinced that the book is about trauma and that the aliens and the time travel that happens in the book is a fantasy and a symptom of that trauma of the character Billy Pilgrim. Some people might say, hey, it's just a crazy sci-fi novel. So I guess I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask, how many people think that this is just sci-fi and has nothing to do with the derangement of this character, Billy Pilgrim? Does anyone feel like it's just sci-fi? No one. Yeah, I didn't think that. But a lot of people do. A lot of people, and also a lot of people read it in high school. And they just said, hey, it was a fun book about aliens that are the size of plumber's friends, and the guy jumps around in time. And I'm shocked by that, frankly. I think it's kind of cool that people feel that way, because it shows the difference that people have, how different people bring different things to literature.
Well, and that's one of the marks of a great work, right, is that so many people can see so many different things in it. You know, you were talking about seeing it as a science fiction. When I read it in high school, it was in a science fiction class.
Right.
And so that's, but it wasn't presented just as science fiction. Obviously, there's something else here, but that was the entree into the book for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so many people, but you're right, everyone can see what they bring to it themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Vonnegut really resented that, the fact that people always put him in what I think he called the science fiction drawer, because critics often discounted him and said he wasn't, you know, worth their attention. And in fact, I think, yeah, the New York Times review of Slaughterhouse Five in 1969, it addressed that issue. It said, you know, don't just think this guy is just a joke, or not that science fiction or genre writing is a joke, but, you know, I think we know that there was a divide, at least back then, between that serious fiction and science fiction. He resented that.
Yeah, there was a little bit more of a you know, separation of science fiction and trivializing of it in his time. Yeah. But it was also lucrative for him.
Yeah, I mean, lucrative is a hard word to apply to Vonnegut pre Slaughterhouse Five. He was not making good money. I mean, he was just starting to, just before Slaughterhouse Five came out. But yeah, he wasn't doing well, but he was getting by, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned this a little bit towards the end of the book, but how did the pandemic affect your ability to research and sort of your information gathering?
It helped it, actually. suddenly there was this pandemic, and I was at the very last stages of writing this book. It was perfect, frankly. I was just at home, and I had about 6 more months of writing. I couldn't complain in terms of that. It worked out well. Although I guess I will complain that my family had to move into my apartment, so I suddenly had all these people there. So I was there alone. So suddenly I had to deal with all that, you know, but not that I don't love my family, but, there was that stress. But, other than that, it was kind of worked out well.
I can't tell you how many writers have, you know, t-shirts that have some variation of "we were born to socially distance" on them.
Oh,
so
perfect,
it seemed to have been a time for people to kind of buckle down into their projects if they were able to do that.
Well, one of the negatives, actually, right now, right here, I can tell. I'm sorry that my voice keeps on hitting this mic in a funny way. I'm not used to, like, I feel like coming out of my apartment, coming to Chicago and doing this event, it's in itself, like, I feel like I'm coming from a spaceship and I'm like suddenly amongst people, and it does feel a little like Vonnegutian in a way.
You're out of time.
Yeah, out of time and out of distance from this mic. So I apologize for that.
Yeah, we're working out the kinks in our new AV system. So hopefully everyone will just wave your arms around if you have trouble hearing something.
Oh, I thought it was me.
No, it's both of us.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
it's both
right,
of us,
okay.
And everybody and all the things.
All right,
absolutely.
Okay.
No, you're doing fine.
Thank you. Okay.
You're doing fine. So when you're looking at a book like this, how do you decide to structure the narrative? What do you outline? Do you write it in pieces and then assemble the pieces? How do you physically put this together?
That's awesome. I guess we're in the American Writers Museum, right?
We are. Yeah. We have to have some craft questions here.
There's so many quotes everywhere. It's like, it's so great. I have to say, I was struggling so much with the structure of it until I came upon this storyline, Kurt Vonnegut, Nazi Slayer. And that's one of the reasons I grabbed onto it. Because I realized, okay, if I'm going to write this book about Slaughterhouse Five and I don't want it to be lit crit, I think I want to write about the life of Kurt Vonnegut. I want to write it. I also want to do a little bit of lit crit. So I do one chapter where I look at it. So I do those two things. But I also wanted to add all this other stuff about PTSD. It all didn't really come together for me until I had the Kurt Vonnegut Nazi Slayer storyline, because I realized that really all this is about is how to tell a war story. And I have to thank Tim O'Brien for being incredibly generous and talking to me so much, because I think for me, I also use him as a sort of a juxtaposition, not a juxtaposition, a compliment. He parallels in different ways Vonnegut. And so I couldn't talk to Vonnegut, so I talked to Tim O'Brien instead, and a bunch of other people. But I think they allowed me to get inside his head, and give me an arc.
What were some of the things that you would have asked Vonnegut if you could?
God. You know, I'm sure. I mean, I would have loved to have talked to him about if he had trauma, point blank. one of the big questions in my book is just like how sad he was and whether or not he was sad and whether or not we could talk about him being sad. And part of that is because the definitive biography of Vonnegut is And So It Goes by Charles Shields, which came out in 2010. And that book is very well researched. Charles Shields did a great job detailing a lot of Vonnegut's life. But he also just met him a couple times at the end of his life when he seemed to be really grumpy. And he depicts him that way. And his family has, Vonnegut's family has a real problem with that. And they're not happy that that's the big biography on Vonnegut paints him as this sad sack. And I would love to get a sense of the balance, or if there was a balance between his humor, or if he was, you know, or you just try to get that vibe from him.
Well, you asked his children, you know, what they remember about his temperament in a couple of different places, and their answers were different from each other.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think they said that he had a mix of happiness and sadness, most maybe a lot of sadness and grumpiness, and they all, well, I don't know if you guys know, he adopted four kids. He had three children with his first wife. The three children were the ones that, with his first wife, were the ones I spoke with. And two of them said he had PTSD, and he was kind of an alcoholic. That's what I get from them. And then the third says, yeah, he probably was. But really what they come down to is he was in touch with just the sadness of being human. I mean, it's a hard as it is to say, he was in touch with that and he was aware of it. He was an artist. And I think a lot of artists are tap into that. And he tried to write uplifting work every once in a while, but really he wanted to be realistic. And as I think a lot of us know, he was an atheist, so he didn't have some pretense to like, oh, things are going to work out in the end. He was an atheist who was a realist who also did want to say that, I mean, I think I'm going to paraphrase, his uncle used to say, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. Just recognizing the good moments. And I think that's what his kids emphasize, that he could recognize the good times. And I encourage anyone just to look him up on YouTube. He's got a couple lectures where you hear him hacking with laughter during some of his lectures. And you can tell the guy had, you know, he had a lot of spunk.
So do you have a passage that you'd like to read for us tonight?
Yeah, we talked about it. And so I'm going to read two things. One is toward the end of the book about his denial that he was affected by the war, which I just find interesting. And then the second part will be more of a, like, just give you a sense of the thrust of why I thought it was so important to write about writing a war story and the complexities of it. Quote, if I told him he had PTSD, he'd tell me to go soak my head. That's what Mark Vonnegut, his son, says. Vonnegut rarely spoke or wrote directly about what he actually felt during the war. The closest we come to hearing from him may be in the letter written by his uncle Alex in 1945, when the young Vonnegut tearfully exclaimed, "The sons of bitches, the sons of bitches," after telling his family the story of Michael Pelea. Michael Pelea is the character upon which Edgar Derby is based on. Michael Pelea was actually a soldier in the prisoner of war camp with Vonnegut, who was killed for stealing a jar of beans, string beans, by the Nazis. In one unusually candid interview in 1996, Vonnegut admitted, "I saw a hell of a lot of death, and I saw a hell of a lot of it during the Battle of the Bulge when my division was wiped out. But then, in Dresden, I saw a mountain of dead people, and that makes you thoughtful." Thoughtful. This is me. Talk about an understatement. But just as this suggests he is admitting something intimately, painfully personal, Vonnegut adds, "It made you think about death. I've said, too, that I would not have missed it for the world. It was a hell of an adventure. You know, as long as you're going to see something really thought-provoking." Vonnegut was never one to accept the boxes that others tried to put him in, and I believe he didn't want to be pinned down as another writer traumatized by war. I suppose you'd think so. Quote, "I suppose you'd think so because that's the cliche," he told Playboy in 1973. "The importance of Dresden in my life has been considerably exaggerated because my book about it became a bestseller. If the book hadn't been a bestseller, it would seem like a very minor experience in my life, and I don't think people's lives are changed by short-term events like that. Dresden was astonishing, but experiences can be astonishing without changing you." Calling what he witnessed during the war a minor experience seems like Vonnegut doth protest too much, and there is plenty of clinical evidence that a short-term experience, if it is harrowing enough, can in fact forever change a person. But Vonnegut's position remained consistent. He wrote in 1981's Palm Sunday, "Being present at the destruction of Dresden has affected my character far less than the death of my mother, the adopting of my sister's children, the sudden realization that those children and my own were no longer dependent on me, the breakup of my marriage, and so on." So that was toward the end of the book. But I just want to give you a little more about the complexity of writing about PTSD and war writing. "When it comes to war, the unexpected abounds." That's like one of my favorite quotes ever. I'm going to try to read it slowly. This is from a World War II veteran and writer, Paul Fussell. "Every war is ironic because every war is worse than expected. Every war constitutes an irony of situation because its means are so melodramatically disproportionate to its presumed ends." Writer Carl Melendez, who served in the Marine Corps in Vietnam from 68 to 69 and has written several books about war, has compared the experience of his combat with the exhilaration akin to scoring the winning touchdown. "You are in a fierce state that is where there is a primitive and savage joy in doing in your enemy," Marlantes writes in his nonfiction book, What It Is Like to Go to War. "I used to hesitate to say this, worried it would only further fuel the accusation that we Vietnam veterans were the sick baby killers we were being told we were. Marlantes tells me that to deny the thrill of war obscures some of its truth. And yet, Tim O'Brien disagrees strongly with his friend on this subject. I'm suspicious of that kind of rhetoric," O'Brien says. "We're going to learn to be better people from killing other people? It's a position where you can justify any war by saying we're going to benefit from it personally and psychologically." This disagreement points us toward one of the difficult ironies of war and PTSD, that veterans who suffer debilitating effects of trauma sometimes have a hard time overcoming their painful memories because the negative ones are fused with positive ones, such as the camaraderie of living with a band of brothers or the thrill of war. I think it is Vonnegut's ability to truck in irony that allows him to shine a whole new light on such complexities. It is Vonnegut's dark, sometimes absurd sense of humor that bestows Slaughterhouse-Five with an ironic integrity that even an earnest writer such as O'Brien can appreciate. Quote, "No one would mistake my prose with Kurt Vonnegut's, but we are interested in the same phenomenon," he says. "I'm not interested in bombs and bullets and military maneuvers, but I am interested in the twisted labyrinth of memory and its corrosive effect on the human spirit." In The Things They Carried, O'Brien writes, "True war stories do not generalize. They do not indulge in abstraction or analysis. For example, war is hell. As a moral declaration, the old truism seems perfectly true, and yet, because it abstracts, because it generalizes, I can't believe it with my stomach. Nothing turns inside. It comes down to gut instinct. A true war story, if truly told, makes the stomach believe. I want to make the case that by this standard, Slaughterhouse-Five is the rare true war story, one that has been felt in the stomach by countless readers, and that in the decades since its publication, our view of its central themes, war, trauma, and the delicate act of telling war stories have finally caught up with Vonnegut's accomplishment, allowing us to see it and the author more clearly. I believe that in making this case, it is necessary to explore a particular question that has come to dominate how many readers are today interpreting the book, whether or not Slaughterhouse-5 can be used as evidence of its author's undiagnosed PTSD. This book is a look under the hood of Slaughterhouse-5. I want to trace how Vonnegut was able to write it as if he himself suffered war trauma, even though he said he never did, and why the novel resonates today as a metaphor for PTSD.
Thank you.
Is there anything that we haven't asked you tonight that you came here wanting to talk about?
I just want to say I'm really happy to be here, because American Writers Museum, just the sense of, like, Kurt Vonnegut, an American writer. You know, so this is a great place to be. I mean, as we know, our people know Kurt Vonnegut. He grew up in Indianapolis, but after the war, he moved to Chicago. He didn't do well at the University of Chicago. And then he also happened to make Billy Pilgrim, his character, get assassinated in Chicago. So, you know, Chicago is an important thing, an important city to Vonnegut in different ways. And just to be here is just very, very cool. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and thank you everyone for being here with us tonight.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, two former military officers and award-winning authors, Elliot Ackerman and Admiral James Stavridis, discuss their recent book, 2034, a novel of the next world war. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.